Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, Dave Filoni, and Jon Favreau, as well as the rest of the team at Lucasfilm, have dreamed up over the past 40 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host Brian Gaughan and I are recording this week's show on Sunday, December 17th, 2023, so we are a week and change out from Christmas, and you were just at one of LA's bigger malls today, weren't you?
Yeah, I was at the Beverly Center. I had to drop off my daughter. She's at Cedar Sinai. She's like following a nurse and stuff.
Volunteering.
And so instead of just driving back and forth, I hang out at the mall for 4 hours, which goes like that. But it was just weird. It's the couple weeks before Christmas, and nobody was there. And this is one of the most elite malls in not only California, but I think in the country. And it was just, it was you could shoot a cannon and knock down nobody. Wow. So it was really bizarre because I remember going there like 20 years ago, and I was there on Christmas Eve because I'm a masochist and I love watching people fight and stuff. And okay. I actually saw Nicolas Cage in the what's that meat stuff you can buy during Christmas?
Oh, dang! I used to get this from my dad. The assortment.
Hickory Farms.
There we go.
And also, and he was in a place where he's looking at this smoked salmon, and he's going, I don't know what to get people. What are they, you know, these things. And he's the day before Christmas. So you know that he was getting something for Uncle Francis or something. But that's what you do. You see people there. I saw a couple people that I recognized from TV. I didn't know who they were, but it's the mall where you know, people go, the celebs go. So it was just interesting, though. I mean, how everybody shops online.
That's it exactly. Kind of just, you know, it's just so strange to do the brick and mortar thing these days, and you know, real, you know, you kind of feel like the one of the dinosaurs. So
and they even charge less for parking. They only charge $1 an hour. Which usually you go to these places and you're paying $30, you know, for parking. I only paid $6 for, you know, four hours.
So. That tells you a lot about what's going on in the world. Yeah. And speaking of what's been going on in the world, folks, look, apologies for there having been no new episodes of Looking at Lucasfilm for a while, but just to cut to the chase, we had a death in the family recently. Aaron Adams, the very talented gentleman who edited all of the podcasts here at Jim Hill Media, had a heart attack on Thanksgiving morning, and it sadly passed away on November 29th. And look, to be blunt, Aaron was a big, big part of the production of all our shows here, not to mention being my co-host on the marvelous Disney podcast. And now, with Mr. Adams gone, we've had to build an entirely new production pipeline. And by the way, Eric Hersey has helped out a lot with that, so I want to be sure to give him a quick shout-out. But look, if we could pivot back to Aaron's sad passing. Mr. Adams left behind a widow, one Sabrina Geiger. Who's now saddled with all sorts of funeral costs and some remaining medical expenses, and which is why Len Testa and Tim O'Brien have set up a GoFundMe in Aaron's memory, with the understanding that all funds collected will then go to Sabrina in her time of sorrow. And look, I realize it's the holiday season, folks. You know, Brian was just talking about going to the mall. But look, this is a time when we typically want to spring lavish gifts on our friends and family. But if you have it to spare this year, well, Mr. Gaughan and I would really love it if you toss a little cash Ms. Geiger's way. By the way, you can check that GoFundMe out, which has an open for Mr. Adams. And not only that, Len came up with a wonderful idea. We did, as a Bandcamp exclusive, a presentation of the one of the early scripts of the American Adventure.
That was great.
But that's the thing. That was almost all Aaron. He handled the production. He hired the actors. He did all of the. I mean, it's. And in fact, he plays Will Rogers in the thing. So, but if you contribute to the GoFundMe, you'll get the opportunity to listen to this amazing version of the American Adventure early on. But again, that GoFundMe is located at tinyurl.com, Aaron Z. Adams. Anyway.
And remember, Aaron is double A.
So there we go. There.
Sometimes I don't remember that. You know, I didn't meet Aaron, but I always had an email conversation with him. And I was just, you know, hoping that one day I was going to meet him and tell him how much I enjoyed, you know, his marvelous stuff.
Yeah,
and
we were always, I mean, that's the irony. We kept talking, especially with Marvelous Disney, about getting him out to California and walking him around the Avengers campus. And, you know, that was, you know, something, you know, that we always managed to kick the can. It's like, okay, not this year, next year, you know, that sort of thing. And, so much of the time we're face down in the ditch working on the show. And that's the thing. Aaron was always the guy who would bitch at me, you know, when any of our podcasts here failed to be posted on its regular, scheduled date. I mean, Aaron was very into consistency. He came out of the radio world, and he was very big, you know, I mean, constantly lectured me about how we need to meet the audience's expectations. So in Aaron's memory, that's what we're going to try to do here, folks. We're going forward. But again, it's tough. I work week in, week out for 7 years with this guy, and it's just weird that he's gone.
And he wasn't that old either.
No, he was 48.
It blows my mind, especially knowing what I'm going through at 63.
It's 64, soon to be 65 here. So
yeah, it's so weird that is definitely too young. I mean, people now are saying 80 is too young. But imagine if we're saying 80 is too young, 48 is just, it's ridiculous.
No, it is. But all right, anyway, I have to say, folks, I can literally hear Aaron in the back of my head right now, and he's saying, "You're getting maudlin, fat man. Wrap it up. Get on with the show." So, again, just a reminder, you want to help out, please go check out that tinyurl.com, Aaron Adams. And if you did so, Brian and I would really appreciate it. Okay, getting now to the news. And the news portion of today's Looking at Lucasfilm is brought to you by TouringPlans.com. TouringPlans can help you save money and time at theme parks like Walt Disney World. So please check them out at TouringPlans.com. Okay, so to get right into it, it's been 2 months and 2 weeks since Star Wars Ahsoka wrapped up its 8-episode run on Disney Plus on October 3rd. Show was written and created by Dave Filoni. Viewership for the Ahsoka finale outpaced Star Wars Andor by 46%.
Oh, good.
But then it also trailed Mandalorian Season 3 by 42%. So was that good? Well, it was certainly good enough that late last month, in fact, on November 21st, Dave Filoni was named the new creative chief creative officer for Lucasfilm, where he will be working closely with studio head Kathleen Kennedy, as well as head of development Carrie Beck.
Now, was this a new The chief creative officer, was that something new, or is he replacing somebody?
I believe this is a new position.
It is a new position.
And what's kind of interesting about this new position is that it supposedly came at the request of Bob Iger.
Oh.
All right. So, and now to understand, you know, Dave Filoni is obviously a known quantity at Lucasfilm. He's been there since 2005, His mentor, you know, was George Lucas himself. And if we look back just over, you know, the most recent projects he's worked on, he was the writer, creator, and executive producer of Ahsoka. Sorry, 65-year-old tongue, folks. You know, okay. Also, executive producer, episodic director, and writer on The Mandalorian and its spinoff, Book of Boba Fett. Creator and executive producer on the animated Bad Batch and Tales of the Jedi. And he's also executive producing the upcoming series for Disney Plus, Star Wars Skeleton Crew.
He's involved in that too?
He is.
Okay.
All right. So here's what I was told. That basically, now remember, we've talked on previous looking at Lucasfilms, that there are three projects being readied, Star Wars films being readied for theatrical release. And I think you were talking about the Taika Waititi project. Also the James Mann. Well, and you were mentioning what was Taika saying about it?
Taika was saying, my Star Wars project is really going to piss off everybody.
Well, there we go. You know, and then we had James Mangold's, that was basically going to show the formation of the Jedi Order. And then, we had the project that Daisy Ridley is coming back to play Rey, where she supposedly, it's a story that's set 15 years after the rise of Skywalker and has her trying to get, you know, the Jedi Order back up and running again. But here's the thing. Iger, especially on the heels of Dial of Destiny, flaming out at the box office this past summer. Evidently, he had a very difficult conversation with Kathleen, just to the effect of, it's like, look, each of these movies is going to be, $175 to $200 million to make, at the least. And, you know, and he stood by and watched the 5 years of development on, you know, the new indie movie, only to then have that project stumble at the box office. And it's just the whole notion of, I can't in good conscience, right, especially right now with so many people concerned about the Disney stock price and, especially with, there's a shareholders challenge going on, with Ike Perlmutter, the former head of.
And you can't forget that documentary that South Park just did with Bob Iger.
Yeah. So anyway, long story short, basically what it wasn't a vote of no confidence. It was just the effect of, I need to know that Star Wars fans are going to respond positively to these. And evidently, this is the one that Dave Filoni entered the conversation. It's like, look, when I look at what's going over on Disney Plus with Star Wars, that's gangbusters. The people there actually know what people want to watch. And it's like, I'm not so sure that these Star Wars movies are like that. So could we maybe get Dave in the mix? And in fact, that's the most interesting thing about, Dave spoke when he got this promotion. He spoke with Vanity Fair and mentioned that in the past, on a lot of projects, I'd only be brought in after it had been developed. And now he gets to come in at the start. He gets to, start things. And so he's consulting on the films. He's consulting on the TV shows. And evidently he's also, going to be helping out with the parks. And
oh, really?
Yeah. By the way, speaking of the parks, this April 5th, we're going to see the return of Season of the Force at Disneyland Park. It's going to run for 2 months, April 5th through June 5th, with May the 4th right in the middle there. But what's kind of interesting is we're going to see the return of Hyperspace Mountain. There's going to be the Star Wars-themed food. But what's really intriguing this time around And it will also come on the heels of that brand new version of the Star Tours ride film, which, by the way, will feature Ahsoka and Boba Fett and Mando and Baby Yoda.
This is being worked on right now.
Yeah. So, okay. You know, so the notion is that starting with this, I mean, we've seen a little of this over the past 2 years or so. I mean, remember, what is it? Mando and Grogu started appearing in Disneyland in November of 2022. And
Before it was Boba Fett and what's her name?
Fennec Shand. Right. So May of that year.
First, yeah. Yeah. And then Boba Fett, The Mandalorian and Baby Yoda, and then Ahsoka, right?
Well, yeah, Ahsoka began appearing in the parks in August of this year, and then the month after that, we got the Hera Syldana character in Chopper started. But this is the
right,
thing.
Right.
We are supposed to start seeing, starting with Season of the Force, these characters out in force. And mind you, Mando and Grogu started appearing at Walt Disney World in March of this year. But with the closure of Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser, that evidently that's now kicked open the door to the effect of, okay, so Boba...
We can do whatever we want now.
In Florida. So
okay.
So the way this is being described in-house is... not exactly a course correction, because that might reflect badly on Kathleen Kennedy and Carrie Beck, but it's more to the effect of we're going to make a concerted effort to give Star Wars fans what they actually want. Now, the downside of that is that James Mangold, I'm not going to lie, I'm not happy about this news, because, you know, face it, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny started as a project that Steven Spielberg was going to direct, and then, what, they had built $30 million worth of sets, and then Steven decided, yeah, I don't want to do this, you know, and so James inherited a lot of, you know, a project that had a lot of working parts that, you know, frankly, he couldn't make the calls on. And this is how Hollywood works. You know, when you lose that much money, it's got to be somebody's fault.
Somebody's fault, yeah.
You know, so it would appear that Mangold is taking the hit. And as a result, his Dawn of the Jedi project may now be dead in the water. You know, it's just the whole notion of, I'm going to give this guy another $200 million to make a movie? You think, I don't think so.
But that doesn't make sense. I mean, you know, Mangold was the director and he did write it, but still, wasn't there too many cooks?
There were battalions of chefs coming,
because everybody said, we need this, you got to make sure this, we got to get rid of this, da 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 da. And then it turned into this, you know, it wasn't incoherent. Were you able to see it yet?
I was supposed to. The reason that Brian is asking me this is I promised ahead of recording this show that I would finally sit down and watch Dial of Destiny, because it's finally become available on Disney Plus. And I have to tell you, real life reared its ugly head. You know, it was it's the holiday season. Somebody had to do the laundry. Somebody had to vacuum the house. And that's it. The 2.5 hours I needed to do that this afternoon evaporated. But when we finish tonight,
in 2 weeks, we'll talk about it.
In 2 weeks. I will watch it tonight. And in fact, I will watch that. And I still have to watch the last two Doctor Who specials with David Tennant.
The last one is brilliant. Mm. Okay. It's so brilliant. I was cheering and Devin was telling me to shut up.
I have to admit, the first one, it was so so lovely to see the doctor and Donna back together. And it,
wait till you see him with Bernard, the grandfather.
I have to admit, again, I have not watched episode two, but I did seek out that clip just because, it just, and again, it's somebody who, look, David Tennant was my doctor. He was the one who got me on board. Did I ever tell you this story?
No.
Okay. We are literally, it's Christmas, I want to say 2007, 2008. And we have just come home from, visiting my parents and you know how you do that thing? It's just before bed and, you flip on the television and you were just looking for 10 or 15 minutes worth of something to, all right, I'm home, I'm settling in, I'm going to bed. And so I'm blipping around the dial and I arrive on BBC America and it's like, what am I looking at? And what I'm looking at is the space Titanic falling out of orbit.
With Kylie Minogue.
Yeah, but this is the thing. It's like, I have no idea what I'm looking at, but there's this skinny man in a tight suit who's, at the wheel of the ship and looks at the map and goes, oh no, not again. And grabs the phone and dials a very long number. And the very next thing you see is, and it's a close shot of just the woman from the knees down who's wearing a fuzzy bathrobe and fuzzy bedroom slippers, but she's got corgis snarling around her feet. And she's running out the front door of what turns out to be Buckingham Palace. And it's like, he called the Queen? And he not only called the Queen, but he managed, as they were plummeting down to Earth, to cold start the engines again. And there's this wonderful special effects shot of the space Titanic missing Buckingham Palace by inches and then going back up into the atmosphere, but with the Queen and her corgis standing in the yard, and she's there in her nightgown and her fuzzy slippers and her hair and curlers, and she waving up to, like, thank you, doctor. And it's like, I have no idea what this is, but this is the greatest show I've ever seen in the history of man. And of course, this being BBC America, they were running the show immediately after it again. And so I ended up saying,
oh, you were like, able to.
Yeah, 2 o'clock in the morning. But it was like, from that point forward, it was like, I was hooked. So to have that doctor back is just so nice. But anyway, we deviated from
yeah, of
okay.
course.
Okay. well, anyway, all right. So getting back to Kathleen Kennedy now, just this past week, Kathleen talked with IGN about Star Wars New Jedi Order. And again, as we mentioned, set 15 years after the rise of Skywalker. So as Kathleen put it, we're post-war, post-First Order, and the Jedi are in disarray. And there's a lot of discussion around who are the Jedi, what are they doing, what's the state of the galaxy. And what's interesting is that Rey is trying to rebuild the Jedi Order based on the ancient texts.
The books.
So, going to be interesting to see where they go with this. But here's the other thing, and I want to stress that there's a reason that there's a Rey movie still in the mix for theatrical release, and that's because so much of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge
is
tied to that character. I mean, just Rise of the Resistance alone. And when you think about how much of that, that land is built around Rey, or that ride, how much infrastructure.
Right.
By the way, did you also see, the story just this past week about the original, Rise of Skywalker, what they were supposed to do.
Colin Trevorrow.
How this was supposed to be the opposite of the original trilogy, that, you know, there was no redemption of Kylo Ren. You know, he was just going to get darker
and then a different version of what happened to her parents. Yeah, I don't know why they didn't do that, because that would have gone right into the two films before it. I mean, you know, when Kylo Ren says your parents were just regular people, well, you know, you knew he was lying. So you were waiting for the real, you know, truth, and the real truth is Palpatine. Yeah, I think that was just that they were panicking, so they had to bring
I think, you know, you're not wrong. The film number 8,
film number 8 is not a bad movie at all.
No. I mean, I would argue that Hamill's performance in that is wonderful. In fact, when you finally get that showdown between Kylo Ren and Luke, you know, that there's so much good stuff there. There just is, you know. But the fact that it did not do the same box office as The Force Awakens, they panicked, and you know.
But see, that's another thing. They're doing all these films by committee, and you know, there's a bunch of films. James Bond was never done by committee. James Bond was done each film was its own film, and it just seemed like, you know, they just wanted to make a film about a guy with a license to kill rather than getting fan, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, I forgive me for, again, I'm sorry, folks, we're stepping away from Star Wars again. There's a television special coming up this week on CBS, a 2-hour-long special celebrating, you know, basically it's a birthday salute to Dick Van Dyke, 98 years old this year.
Yeah.
But today, he was on CBS Sunday Morning and was telling the tale about, you know, when it was the 1960s and his career was hotter than hot. And evidently, the Broccoli family came to Dick Van Dyke and said, you know, and again, there was that moment where Sean Connery said, yeah, I'm done. And so they were looking for the next Dick Van Dyke, the next James Bond.
James Bond.
And they offered it to Dick Van Dyke. And Dick Van Dyke, and this is why I love this guy. I just, I've loved him my entire life, but he's also, you know, a guy who's realistic about this. And he's like, you know, went to the Broccoli family and it's like, You saw Mary Poppins, right? You've heard my British accent, you know, and it's like, no, thank you, no. You know, I'm not going to do that again. Anyway, back to all things Star Wars. It's like, look, here's what we know is definitely coming. And again, part of this is because Dave Filoni is now the chief creative officer at Lucasfilm. Okay, right at this point, season 2 of Ahsoka, not Osaka, sorry, is a lock. But that's largely because they need to do that to set up the Avengers-like movie, where all of the Star Wars Disney Plus characters, Ahsoka, Boba Fett and Mando, get a film where they take on Thrawn. So, you know, that much we know is coming. Also, interesting bend on this, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this, Brian. There's actually also serious thought about, if we're going to do stuff to try to make the Star Wars fans happy, it's time now to move Star Wars back from a December release date to a May release date.
So. Yes, absolutely. 100%. May 25th.
Okay.
I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Because, first of all, these are summer films. They are not winter films. Second of all, now you don't, I mean, this is something that may or may happen, but you don't get any nominations anymore.
Because they're
just thrown away at the very end. And I know it's all about the money and it's not so much about the awards, but still. But the main thing is, it was something to look forward to when school got out. That you would see the new Star Wars films at least 3 or 4 times during the summer. And then whatever else there was, you know, that was good. I mean, we had the blockbusters. I think May is meant for blockbusters, or the summer is meant for blockbusters, and December is not.
Okay. You know, I mean, what's interesting is when you talk with the folks at Disney, they were, you know, it was more to the effect of, we want to open this in December because we want that week between Christmas and New Year's when the kids are home and so many films had done so well in that spot. And let's not overlook the fact that, you know, at that point, Marvel, that's where they wanted to drop the Marvel event films like, you know, Endgame and Infinity Wars. So, okay, now, just to stress here, folks, look, this is supposedly something Bob Iger asked for, but let's remember that Bob Iger is kind of embattled at the moment. We mentioned earlier in the show, he's facing a shareholders uprising that involves, Ike Perlmutter and Nelson Peltz, and where this gets really interesting is that they're trying to get two people put on the Disney board, and one of them is Jay Rasulo, the former CFO of the company, who for a time was also in charge of the park. So going to be hard to see how Disney fights the idea of, you know, creating a space on the board for a Jay Rasulo. I mean, that's a very smart, interesting play on Nelson's part. But also remember, you know, Iger's only signed through 2026, and that in Hollywood time, that's a blip. I mean, we're going to be in 2024 in what, 2 weeks? And look, if there's another Disney CEO, this plan could and most likely will change. So
is Jay Rasulo coming back? Is that a bad idea?
Yep. The problem is not necessarily that Jay Rasulo coming back is a bad idea. The question is it Jay Rasulo who has gotten his seat on the board because of Ike Perlmutter and Nelson Peltz? And Ike Perlmutter has made no bones about the fact that he's got a personal vendetta against Bob Iger. So, just going to be interesting to, you know, so when somebody gets you a seat in the bowl.
But Jay did such a great job for when he was there that why would he want to upset the apple cart? You know, I don't see – I don't – yes, I know he's been brought in by those guys. Yeah. But still, I still can't see that he would not want to do the best – what's the best for Disney.
Well, you know,
because he's been involved with it for so long.
Okay, but remember the old cliche, Brian. You got to dance with the one who brung you. So, you know, if somebody spent the money and moved the shares of stock to get you in position on the board, you know, you then have to carry water for them. You know,
I guess so.
You know, Nelson and Ike have some very distinct ideas about what they want to do next with Disney. And, you know, some of them involve offloading ABC and ESPN, and you know, it's an interesting time. And
yeah,
speaking of interesting time, that it's now okay, time for our show break. But when we get back, we're going to talk about what's going to or what could have happened at Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. And we're back. Before we get started here, Brian, you wanted to talk for a little bit about Rebel Moon, and I think the phrase you used was the bullet we dodged. You know,
Zack Snyder has just come out with his Star Wars film, which he had brought to Kathleen. I think he brought it to George before George sold it. And he was doing publicity for it, and he says it goes back to the Japanese cinema and things like Seven Samurai, etc. So the movie came out and it got a beating from the critics. Audiences like it. Audience gave it 85%. Critics gave it 20%. Now, my theory on this is criticism is anybody with a typewriter. Not even a typewriter anymore. Yep. It's people who want to prove that they're smarter than everybody else when it comes to film. That film is not just something to watch and enjoy for a particular audience, but it should give us something to change the world. So instead of being entertained by this, and of course everybody's going after Zack Snyder anyways, mm-hmm. because of his Justice League and the main thing when people are on top, people want to see them fall. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the best examples of was The Lone Ranger, which was a good, if not great, film. But it was devastated because I think they were against Johnny Depp. They were against the director. It seems like people have vendettas sometimes. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. I mean, there have been a couple films that just came out this year where it did not get good reviews, but the audiences went to see it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what Rebel Moon is getting. I'm looking forward to it, and I will. And if it's showing near me anywhere, I will go see it on the big screen because okay. I love Japanese cinema, and I've been watching that since day one, almost in high school. And to see, does anybody realize that A Bug's Life was based on Seven Samurai?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So I think it's going to be a good film. Listen, didn't everybody hate Titanic when it first came out? Didn't everybody hate Avatar when it first came out? So it's like, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's interesting. You mentioned, the critics kind of piled on with Rebel Moon. I face it, we admit this in the show, that Brian and I are old farts. We grew up in an age where, critics loved film. In fact, I'm holding a copy right here now of Matt Singer's wonderful Opposable Thumbs. So it's subtitled, How Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert Changed Movies Forever. And it's a lovely look back, at the Movies TV show, how these two critics in Chicago came together and would passionately debate the films of the day. And the interesting thing is, when you were a film buff, you'd actually make time to watch this, to sort of like, what do these guys think of it? And they would help you discover little films, or they'd give you perspective on the big blockbusters and that sort of thing. But I bring up Opposable Thumbs because Matt has a wonderful story in here about how it's 1989 and the American Film Institute is holding an event in Washington, D.C., and Gene and Roger are there and decide, at their hotel, and they decide to go down to the bar. And who do they bump into at the bar but George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, and Martin Scorsese? and they persuade all three of these to come, guys, to come on the show and interview them about issues like film preservation. And the show was titled The Future of Movies. And what's weird is Matt points out, 30 years later, we now live in the future he predicted. In fact, George Lucas, remember, this is 1989, he's doing this interview. That's the year that the World Wide Web was first invented. And the architect of Star Wars essentially predicted the world of streaming movies. That he told Roger Ebert, I think that the marketplace will shift dramatically. I think certain kinds of movies will be made directly for the home. And by the way, Nancy and I just last weekend were down in New Jersey for Christmas Con, which was a celebration of all things Hallmark. And, you know, I will tell you, Brian, Saturday morning, we're driving to the New Jersey Expo Center, and we passed a line of 300 cars that didn't know you could get into the Expo Center from the back, you know, and it was just one of these things where it's like, holy cow, look at that crowd. But anyway, okay.
Now, I just have to have one question, because I love going to conventions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do people cosplay at this event, at this convention?
There are a lot of Christmas sweaters, if that's what you're asking. You know, I mean, that's the thing with the, you know, all the Hallmark hunks were there. In fact, you know, Nancy visited with her favorite Tyler Hines a multiple times.
Oh, really? Was he there?
He was there, you know.
Well, you know what? This year has been an outstanding year for Christmas movies on Hallmark. I mean, outstanding. They have really upped their game. And there have been some great ones, and I've been really enjoying. Plus, Netflix and
everybody's, Amazon. Yeah, they're all in this space. They're all in this space. Yeah. All right. Anyway, back to Mr. Lucas. He said, again, shifting dramatically, I think certain kinds of movies will be made directly for the home, and certain kinds of movies will be made for theatrical presentation. The larger, more spectacular ones will end up in theaters, and the more personal ones will end up on the home screen. So, and again, George was able to look over the horizon and see this coming.
What did the others say when he said that? Did they go, okay, George, you know, go back to your ranch and do what you had to do? Or did they say, yeah, that they saw that coming too?
I don't know what I just put down the book. Okay. All right. So, okay.
We'll talk about that in 2 weeks.
We'll talk about that in 2 weeks. Okay. So anyway, we promised to talk a bit about Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. And face it, you know, what's interesting about when Star Wars Galaxy's Edge got announced in 2015, you know, Disney made a very big deal about, you know, this is our most highly themed land we've ever done, you know, and let's be honest here, one of the reasons they did what they did is that Universal had done so much spectacular work with the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. You know, that just, you know, that had set the new gold standard for a recreation of a film environment. And Disney was determined to, okay, you guys did this. Wait till you see what we do. And so, for example.
But in between, didn't they already do Avatar?
Yes. But, you know, that's the other interesting thing about this, that, you know. We were just this most recent trip, myself, Len, and Jim Shull, spent, you know, some time in Animal Kingdom and went down to Avatar. And again, you know, a good amount of people headed down that way. But at the same time, it's still only two rides, you know, and a restaurant and a shop, you know, and it just. And more to the point, it's also a cul-de-sac, you know, that you walk down into it and then you have to walk back up out of it. You know, it's in a lot of ways, it's a land that's got issues, you know.
Okay.
And there are a lot of creative decisions that, to be honest, that have come back and bit them in the butt. I mean, for example, the Navi River Adventure. You know, Joe Rohde made the decision when this attraction was being developed. He wanted an intimate. He wanted, you know, that's why, for example, there's only four people in each boat. You know, it's like this was going to be a genuinely intimate experience. Downside is that when you have a four-passenger boat, you have a two-hour-long line most days, you know, to get on your four passenger boat and to then have the ride basically be over in 3 minutes. People are like, what? I spent 2 hours to stand in line for for a 2 minute long boat ride. It's like, anyway, get back to Galaxy's Edge. I mean, no expense was spared, and you know, and they leaned into the details. I mean, I remember talking with the Imagineers how they actually contacted Lucasfilm's archives to get R2-D2's, you know, to find out what the tread pattern was for R2-D2, so they could then, as they were pouring the concrete for the pavement, create what looked like droid tracks running through the land. And not only droid tracks, but it's like specifically R2-D2's droid tracks leading through the land. Because that was the other thing. There were going to be all of these droids running around. It was going to be a very active space. And you can look at the concept art that was released early on, and you see multiple droids out in the land. And those got cut. You know, and now, of course, we talked on our most recent Looking at Lucasfilm about the BD-1 droids. They were doing that test back in October of the trio. Yeah, but that was Disneyland. You know, and the problem is each of them needs a handler. You know, it's expensive. And now, mind you, the droid that did not make it into the land, SK-620, did wind up aboard the Galactic Star Cruiser. In fact, that's kind of the refrain here, that in each case, all of the things that were going to make this land truly spectacular were either clawed back for for the Galactic Star Cruiser. I mean, for example, the supper club on the lower level of the Halcyon, that was literally supposed to be where you left when you went into Oga's Cantina. That was the lobby. That was the hold area. You're supposed to buy a drink and hang out in there, and then like, oh, the supper club's open. Come join us in the next room. And you then went in there and had like an hour-long show presented. And then, you know, Olga's Cantina was empty and the next group would come in. But they decided, no, let's put that aboard the Halcyon. And even the stunt show in that area that directly surrounds Kylo Ren's, the ship, that got built. Literally, where... everything was supposed to happen directly above your head, you know, and was supposed to stand in the square there and watch this amazing battle between the rebels and the First Order. And let's be honest here, Brian, that's why the blue and green milk station was built where it was. You were supposed to be standing there waiting for the show to begin. And it's like, well, why don't we buy some blue milk while we're waiting? But again, in all of these cases, Bob Chapek, the then head of, first Disney Parks Products and Experiences, and then the head of the Disney company itself, made the decision that, no, we're going to claw those back for the Halcyon. But just this past trip, I learned the complete heartbreaker about the Bantha. And we've talked on the show previously about this, right? What was supposed to be the third ride for Galaxy's Edge, the Bantha ride. And what I did not know is how late in the process this project got canceled. And in fact, in kind of, you know, it's sort of the sequel to the stunt show that got built, but they never turned the key on. I was in Galaxy's Edge and got pointed out to me that in fact, I need to describe something here for you folks. If you've ever been to any of the Galaxy's Edge, there is, of course, the Rebel encampment at one end, and then there, of course, at the other end of the facility is where Kylo Ren's ship has landed in the public square. But there's also that marketplace that's indoors. You have to sort of take a couple of steps up to go into it. But there's also a broad walkway right next to the marketplace. that has these archways that go up like 30 feet. And I was standing there this past trip and got pointed out to me, "Do you see the archway?" It's like, "Yeah." "You want to know why it's 30 feet tall?" And it's like, "No, what happened?" Well, it had to be that tall so that what a bantha loaded down with guests that it would clear the space. And it's like, "Are you kidding me? They actually built it?" It's like, "Yeah, that this is how late in the project the bantha ride got cut." That and you know the literally you're supposed to be able to board the bantha up at the rebel encampment, and then it was kind of like the trolley, the horse-drawn trolley at Disneyland, that you know you would take it down to the village square, and then the guests would get off, and then the next group of guests would climb on board and be taken up to the rebel encampment.
And so it would basically go through the town?
Well, it would go through that road next to the marketplace. You were, you know, but on the other hand, it would have had this wonderful kinetic to but then when you stand there now today and go, "Oh God, this is why this street is so wide." And more to the point, this is why the archways are so tall. They had to be able to bring this living creature, this autonomous walking platform that was going to carry, I want to say, as many as 16 guests at a time. But anyway, you know, I just and that's the other thing in talking with folks at Disney today. The notion of, okay, we have to turn Star Wars Galaxy's Edge more into what people expected. So again, we're going to see Ahsoka, we're going to see, Boba Fett, we're going to see Mando and Hera Sithana and Chopper. But the other thing that's kind of interesting is that the people who work in food and beverage at both Disneyland and Disney Hollywood Studios, evidently are especially on the heels of the Galactic Star Cruiser shutting down. And it's like, look, you have to give us the stunt show. You know, look, the facility's built, and more to the point, you know,
on both coasts, the facilities are?
Well, it's more about the fact that, remember, this is food and beverage that's making the request. That it's like, look, we had that show in there, you know, we spent so much money developing blue milk and green milk, and that we would actually sell stuff. You know, right now, I mean, it's kind of embarrassing. You go into the park and they have this three-turn queue built. And I have never seen more than 2 and 3 people at a time now standing in that line, because it's the whole notion of the people, the early adopters, you know, were like, "Yeah, I had it. It's blue milk. I'm never having it again. It's not butterbeer. I don't need to have it the next time I'm in the park." But if that stunt show were there, you know, people would be standing in the hot sun and looking for a beverage. And so, they are very insistent. So might be interesting to see in the next year or two whether that stunt show finally, you know.
Are they afraid of, you know, spending the money? I mean, what's holding the stunt show back? Because it just seems like a no-brainer, because as you go into Galaxy's Edge, it's just basically a destination. You see this, you go to a show, you drink blue milk, you have a hot dog, you buy a droid. If they had a stunt show, then it would be a destination to where you'd go there and face it. There's not a lot of live shows like that anymore.
Well,
Universal got rid of theirs.
Well, but remember, Universal is also, especially in Hollywood. I mean, you know, that how long has Waterworld been running? And
well, that Waterworld, but I remember the Cowboy Sun Show.
Yeah, the Wild Wild West Show.
Yeah.
No, that was great fun. I all right. Just one last little piece of the puzzle here. The hesitation about bringing back the original version of the stunt show, which would have keyed off of Kylo Ren, is this very thing. You know, we're just going to circle back to the whole Dave Filoni thing, the notion of that you have a new creative officer, and you have a Bob Iger who's saying people like those things that are done on Disney Plus. And the notion is, well, if we're going to do a stunt show, and we know that, you know, Thrawn is our big bad, what's the point of investing in a, you know, or resurrecting a Kylo Ren show when, in just a couple of years, we're going to have a giant theatrical release where Thrawn is the big bad and he's battling with Ahsoka and Boba Fett and Mando. If those are the characters we're bringing into the land, shouldn't we retool our stunt show?
That would be terrific, yeah. Especially if you see a baby Yoda in full Mandalorian armor.
That could be cool. All right. Well, anyway, folks, that is going to do it for this week. Brian and I will be back in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, Brian, can you tell the nice folks where they can find you on social media?
Yeah, I'm doing things on Instagram, and people are finding me. It's BTGAN, GAUGHAN, and you can find me on Instagram under that.
Okay. Well, all right. Now, I on the other hand, you can find me on the site formerly known as Twitter, X, whatever. Also, Instagram is Jim Hill Media, and over on Facebook is Jim Hill Media News. Let's see. We also have a bunch of other podcasts here. We'd love you to sample. We, of course, have Disney Dish I do with Len Testa. We just got a brand new Fine Tuning out the door with Drew Taylor. And by the way, Drew has a wonderful podcast of his own that he does with Charles Hood. And that is Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast. For you fans of Marvel Us Disney, I will be reviving that show in some format. I'm still kind of feeling my way. I want to do something that's respectful to Aaron. We'll keep you posted. Beyond that, want to remind you about the other project Len and I have been doing with Jim Shull, Disney Unpacked. That's been got off to an amazing start. Thank you so much for you folks who've decided to join us on Patreon. This month, we have an amazing show about Disney MGM. That was one of the first projects of size that Mr. Shull worked on when he came to work to Disney in the late 1980s. And next month, January 2024, we have an in-depth look at Mickey's Birthday Land from 88. So,
Remember, mm-hmm. remind everybody yep. that you're no longer going to be on Bandcamp.
Yeah, that's that supposedly as of January, we're shutting down Bandcamp and we're encouraging everybody to come over to Patreon. Let's see what else. Something else. Just if you folks could do Brian and I a favor, if you get head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and recommend the show you're listening to right now, looking at Lucasfilm, that would be great. And also just one more reminder here that again, Len and Tim O'Brien have set up that GoFundMe in Aaron's memory. And any funds that are collected over there are going to go to Sabrina and her time of sorrow. So if, again, you could do Brian and I a favor and go over and check that out. Again, tinyurl.com, Aaron Z. Adams. But beyond that,
I just want to wish you and everybody else out there a great holiday.
Yeah, thank you.
Christmas you. Mm-hmm. and New Year's. Mm-hmm. And it's been fun this year, and I can't wait to continue it next year.
Yeah, same thing here. And so on behalf of Mr. Ghana and myself, have a happy holiday, and we will see you all in 2024.